Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. After nearly a decade of political struggle, the landlocked South Asian nation of Nepal this week passed a constitution. Nepal's monarchy, which ruled the country for more than two centuries, came to a formal end in 2008 and birthed the Federal Democratic Republic of Nepal. The country, still reeling from a devastating earthquake in April that killed nearly 10,000, passed the new constitution with majority support. But riots and violence marred the celebrations, with some groups contending that their rights had been trampled upon. Neighboring India, whose influence over Nepal looms large, is also unhappy, worried that the violence will spill into its north. Nepal has more than 100 ethnic minorities, and the constitution that lawmakers adopted will carve the nation of 28 million into seven provinces. Joining me now to help make sense of it all is Santosh Giri. He practiced constitutional law and human rights in Nepal from 1995 through 2005, and he came to the U.S. to obtain a master's in law from Golden Gate University in San Francisco. He's also the West Coast coordinator for Bibek Shiel, a new political party in Nepal. Welcome to Uprising, Santosh. Thanks for joining us. First, what is the significance of the adoption on Sunday by Nepal of a constitution, a formal adoption of a constitution? How significant is that?
So the constitution of Nepal finally was promulgated in almost 8 years. And the best thing about it is the people of Nepal at least have a constitution right now, whereas there had been a political vacuum. There was a vacuum of law of the land. But with the promulgation of constitution, there has been widespread support towards it, as well as there has been people and factions of the society were dissatisfied about a few things that were not included in the constitution or a few issues that were not addressed. So right now, the best thing that has happened to Nepal in a couple of years, almost a decade, is we have at least the law of the land in its place, and then we have a way forward to it. So the entire section of the society, the entire people of Nepal are very, very positive that there will be economic transformation, there will be social transformation, and each and every issue that has been lacking, rights issues and economic issues, will be addressed in the days to come.
And so this was a sort of a new step after the overthrow of a centuries-old monarchy. However, there was a response among Nepalese. There were protests and violence that resulted from the adoption of this constitution. Why?
Yeah, so we have experienced wide range of political ups and downs in almost a decade now, more than a decade, I would say. For the last 25 years, unfortunately, we had 24 governments. So this clearly shows what was the level of political participation, what kind of political environment was in Nepal. So with the overthrow of the monarchy in 2006, the actual democracy or that was promised by the political parties to the people, establishment of a republic and federalism in Nepal. These things started coming into picture. So there was a lot of violence when the monarchy was overthrown. But again, right now, when we are promulgating a constitution, meeting those aspirations which are set back in 2006, we still have violence going on. So there are people who have not been addressed. There are rights that have not been addressed in these constitutions. Or there has been dissent in the process it has been promulgated. So even as we speak right now, I was reported 3 hours back that there has been some political unrest in the eastern region of Nepal, in Biratnagar area, where there is a clash among police and local people. So these are very critical issues, which I am hoping, as a constitutional expert, as a lawyer from Nepal, that over time, all these rights and issues will be addressed by the law of the land. It is pretty much the duty of every Nepalese citizen to uphold the constitution, take it positively and move forward. And the Constitution at the same time has made provisions that amendments can be made to it, changes can be made to it. So it has definitely given an opportunity for people or the factions of the society or a group who are concerned about not being addressed in the Constitution. They can come forward for an amendment of the Constitution or any articles.
So what you're saying is that there are groups, political groups and ethnic groups in Nepal that feel like they've been left out. Their rights have not been enshrined in the Constitution. But because it has taken so long to just get to this moment that those groups, those interests should attempt to go through the political process and offer amendments to the Constitution, is that the sort of best way forward right now?
Amendments should not be an issue. Whenever there's an amendment, whenever there's a constitution, it can be amendment. Constitution of India has been amendment a couple of times. Constitution of France has been amendment multiple times. We have the best constitution right here in the United States, where it started just with Bill of Rights, a two-pages constitution, and we have been having amendments, and all the issues have been addressed. The law of the land should be dynamic, and we cannot just be stuck in one document right now for Nepal, which has been promulgated this week. We cannot just understand it as one document which is going to be there forever and it cannot be amended. So we definitely have a room for amendment there and make changes to it and address the issues and problems to it. But at the same time, the entire international community, the international actors, should also come forward supporting this achievement of people of Nepal, which the Constitution Assembly was not just a dream after overthrowing of the monarchy, but it had actually begun back in 1957, when the people of Nepal were successful in overthrowing the Rana regime, which the people helped the king of Nepal overthrow the Rana prime minister regime and establish a monarchy. And it has been a process laid out by the people for the people. But at the same time, there are sections of our society which have not been properly addressed. I'll give you an example. The core reason for the dissatisfaction on the constitution right now is the Madhes community. It's in the eastern and southern and midsection of Nepal, where we have been hearing a lot of words for economic rights, social rights, and cultural rights, which definitely these three rights, people have been marginalized. They have not been equally taken into consideration, and all the developments have been pretty much focused on the capital, Kathmandu, and the development have been focused on other ethnicities. So when we are seeing this movement for economic rights, social rights, and cultural rights, at the same time, civil rights and political rights also come into pictures. Now, political parties which are practicing in the Madhes region of Nepal, the Terai region of Nepal, they have been instigating some of them. I'm not blaming all of the political parties, but some political parties and political actors have been instigating violence among these ethnic tribes and ethnic community. So these are the things which could be taken into consideration, and maybe we could move forward making the constitution better day by day. The document could be made dynamic to address the rapidly changing society of Nepal. And at the same time, I'd also like to add that we have India and China, world's fastest moving economy on both sides. Actually, Nepal is situated in a very sweet spot right at this time. And if we do it right, if we make this right, we could equally benefit nationally. We could benefit from our two biggest partners, biggest allies, biggest neighbors.
And I want to get to you. I want to get to what
economic transformation.
I want to get to what India and China's reactions have been. But going back to communities affected, you mentioned the Madhes community. What about India's, Nepal's? What about Nepal's Maoist rebels who had laid down arms some years ago and agreed to join the political process? How did they see the constitution today?
This entire constitution had been driven by the Maoists, I would say, right from the beginning, from 2006.
Right.
But after the first election of the Constitution Assembly in 2008, it failed to deliver a constitution within a stipulated time of 2 years. Then the Constitution Assembly had to be re-elected again. The first constitutional assembly, Maoists had a majority, but even with a majority, it could not deliver a constitution. The second constitutional assembly, people voted against the Maoists, and then the Maoists were a minority. But other traditional political parties like Nepali Congress, Nepal Communist Party, Marxists, Leninists, and other actors came into picture. So Maoists have had a very vital role in this entire process. They have laid down arms. They are in the democratic process. But at the same time, it is very, very unfortunate that Maoist party itself has been split into three or four different factions, just based on the theory that whatever theory that Maoist party was established upon to take up arms to capture the entire state has not been accomplished. And now we also have two or three dissent, unsatisfied Maoist factions taking up arms, instigating people in the Terai and Tharu region and pushing for the people's uprising in the name of, not being treated equal in this constitution. So we have both positive aspects of the Maoists, and there's been a negative output as well.
Now, finally, what about India and China? India certainly had and played a heavy influence over Nepal's politics. How has it responded to this the new constitution being adopted?
Sure. So as soon as the constitution was promulgated, India, China, and America were the countries who first came forward welcoming the constitution. China welcomed the constitution without any conditions. America welcomed the constitution without any condition. But India, as a very, very important strategic partner, and also we share an open border. So anything that happens in Nepal literally affects India. Anything happens in India literally affects Nepal, especially on the borderline. India actually welcomed the constitution, but conditionally. India pretty much laid out its concern through the special envoy of the Prime Minister, Mr. Narendra Modi. And he delivered his message as a special envoy that if there is political unrest going on in the Terai Madras region in Nepal, it is directly going to affect the Bihar election that's going to happen in a month. So India is equally concerned about security measures, and India wants to make sure that all the sections of the society, all the people from Nepal, should feel that constitution equally belongs to all of them. Nepal should definitely welcome India's such stance because definitely we have been partners, we have been neighbors for thousands and thousands of years, and we are going there to be. We are there to remain. So when Nepal promulgates this constitution, it has to be open enough to hear India out, what concerns India has. And Nepal should be open enough to promise India that these issues, these instabilities will be taken care of. And India should also be asked to help Nepal in fixing these issues, that is uprising and unrest.
Right.
But things have been going back and forth between diplomatically between India and Nepal for the last 2 to 3 days. And pretty much, except for these four, 2 to 3 elements, India has fully endorsed and supported the constitution of Nepal.
And the reason that most Americans paid attention to Nepal this year was the horrific earthquake in April that killed nearly 10,000 people. How has that natural disaster and the man-made disaster that followed it because of, poor infrastructure, how has that impacted the political process in Nepal? Is the country still struggling, from the aftermath of that? And did that play into the discussions around and the politics around the constitution?
Yeah, so unfortunately, we had to go through the earthquake. We had always been talking about the earthquake in Nepal before the earthquake.
But people knew it was going to happen.
When it happened, we saw that the government absolutely lacked level of preparedness. The government did not even have tents or tarps to distribute to its people. The government did not have whatever was required to reach out to the people within 24 hours or 48 hours. That's where Vivek Singh Nepali comes in. Vivek Singh Nepali is a political party. It's a youth-led initiative. And we have been drilling this entire process. We have been practicing the process. And within 20 minutes of the earthquake, Diviksha Nepal, his volunteers, almost 3,000 of us, we reached out to each and every hospital. We reached out to 18 districts. We delivered the support and supplies, not just physically, but also we have been supporting mentally. We have been supporting psychologically. We have been helping people rehabilitate. The political parties at the same time, after the earthquake, after the earthquake aftermath, what we saw was none of the political parties were actually prepared enough to mobilize its huge amount of members, mobilize its huge amount of financial capability, whereas they could have definitely reached out to the people and gained people trust, which they have lost in the last 25 years. That did not happen. Now, after the earthquake, the entire international community has come forward. Now, the international community has committed to $4 billion in reconstruction and resurgence of Nepal. But with the vacuum of the law, with the vacuum of law of land, you know, even that support that is coming from the international community was very, very questionable in terms of accountability and transparency. Now, with the promulgation of the constitution of Nepal, at least we can ascertain that the people can demand for transparency, the people can demand for accountability, not just the people of Nepal. The entire international community can have a higher level of trust to support Nepal and provide the support they need to come out of this catastrophe.
Well, I want to thank you, Santosh, so much for joining us today and helping shed some light on these issues. Thanks so much.
Thank you. The pleasure is all mine.
I've been speaking with Santosh Giri. He practiced constitutional law and human rights in Nepal from 1995 through 2005. He came to the United States to obtain a master's in law from Golden Gate University in San Francisco, and he's the West Coast coordinator for Bibek Shiel, which is a new political party in Nepal. This is Uprising. We'll be back after this break.